You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the edition covering the 4th to the 10th of December 2014. My name is Chris Parr. I'm joined by books editor Karen Shook, reporter Holly Else and deputy news editor John Morgan. A National Audit Office report into private providers has been making waves this week, and it's the subject of our lead news story. More on that in a second. Our book section is always fascinating reading, and this week is no exception. Karen has a rundown for us. More than a quarter of UK scientists have felt tempted or under pressure to compromise the integrity of their research, a report has found. Holly will tell us more about that soon. And this week's cover story looks at conflicts within universities. What does the turmoil witnessed at the University of Plymouth mean for university governance? But first, our lead news story. A National Audit Office report on private colleges, John, I said, has been making a few waves this week, and we focus a little bit more closely on it in our splash.
So this is the National Audit Office report on public funding at private colleges. And obviously we've been following this very closely at THE in recent months and years, the issue about private colleges. And basically the NAO is the UK's public spending watchdog, and it's started an investigation into this issue because there were worries about whether students, some private providers had claimed support that they weren't eligible for, whether some private colleges had recruited students who, in the NAO's words, did not have the capability or motivation to complete their courses, and whether some colleges have recruited students and received public funding onto courses that didn't have approval for that public funding. And there were also concerns about the information about student attendance provided by some private colleges.
That's the crux of it a lot, isn't it? The fact that it's public money that these students can access, and a lot of them aren't even showing up for courses, or indeed shouldn't have got the money in the first place, allegedly, some of these report findings.
Those are the concerns, yes. And obviously there was supposed to be a higher education bill introduced by the coalition. That didn't happen because the Lib Dems didn't want to get involved again in HE after fees. But nevertheless,
yes, you wouldn't want to sully that record, would you?
The coalition government did nevertheless go ahead, critics would claim, with this expansion of student numbers at private providers without the regulatory framework to control that expansion, without the caps on student numbers, without the quality assurance guarantees that a bill would have provided. So that's where the issues have arisen. And in the piece in the magazine this week, we're looking in particular at which colleges is it that have been named by the NAO and which have been singled out by them. And the NAO gives a list of 10 private providers with dropout rates above 20%. And it also lists the private colleges with the highest number of, in its word, potentially ineligible students EU students who were recruited by private colleges who were claiming maintenance funding when they didn't have the eligibility to access that maintenance funding. And it also kind of singles out, you know, the five fastest growing colleges, which is St Patrick's, London School of Business and Finance, GSM London, the British Institute of Technology and E-commerce, and the UK College of Business and Computing. And the NAO says that those five colleges have accounted for half the growth in student numbers with public funding over the last 4 years.
Interesting stuff. I mean, it's just, you know, some of the things you've talked about there have been suspected for a while. We've certainly done plenty of stories where we've revealed details about individual cases. What happens next, though, now that we've got a fairly official report into it? You know, we're not just presumably things don't stop here. There's going to be a response.
That's right. The NAO works in tandem with the Public Accounts Committee. So MPs on the Public Accounts Committee will be holding a hearing on this issue on December the 15th, and that will give Margaret Hodge, the famously fearsome Labour MP who chairs the Public Accounts Committee, a chance to sink her teeth into some representatives from BIS, Student Loans Company, and also the HEFCE chief executive has been asked to attend. And also, interestingly, the Public Accounts Committee has also asked the president of Pearson to attend as well, and Pearson is the sort of validator for the higher national courses that private colleges have kind of overwhelmingly used in this sort of rapid expansion we've seen in recent years.
Mm. They're going to get hodged, I believe is the phrase.
Yeah, I think that's a verb now. So, yeah,
carpeted, basically.
That's coming for them. Yes, that'll be interesting to see what she has to say about it.
Yeah, watch this space. We'll cover that, of course, on timeshighereducation.co.uk as and when we can. That story that we've been discussing is on page 6 and 7 in the magazine this week and also online. Moving a bit further back in the magazine, the books section, Karen, what's in store this week?
Well, a lot of people think that cultural studies can be a fraught area if you're not from that discipline. Sometimes the subjects and the ways of writing about them seem opaque, even to other scholars, much less the general public. Our reviewer, Peter Smith, tackles a book this week by Dara Blumenthal called Little Vast Rooms of Undoing, Exploring Identity and Embodiment Through Public Toilet Spaces. If you would like to learn more about a particular approach to a subject that seems simple and a bit odd for a scholarly book, and a result which our reviewer says is pretty incomprehensible, it makes for amusing reading. I suspect possibly more than the book itself might be. On the other side of cultural studies, we have a review of a fantastic book by Francis Stracey, the late scholar who passed away in 2009. This book was put together posthumously from her notes and her work. I understand her widower played a main role. The book is Constructed Situations, a new history of the Situationist International, Alex Danchev, who knows a bit about manifestos from arts groups, writes about it. The interesting thing is that the Situationists, famously Guy Debord's lots, the people finding the stars under the paving stones and so on in Paris in 1968, that group at any one time numbered average 10 to 20 members. Mm. So obviously their influence far outweighed the number of people who were involved. Anyway, it is looking like the, you know, probably the definitive work on the subject, and we're really happy to cover it. Edward O. Wilson's new book is being covered this week by Simon Underdown, obviously the eminent biologist who famously criticized the giving of Pulitzer Prizes to other academics. He dismissed it as worthless when Carl Sagan won the prize for nonfiction in 1978. But as he admits in this book, when he himself won it the following year, he realised that it seemed like a huge accolade, so a nice example of his humility there. Also this week we cover a book by John Campbell and Kasim Kassam, Barclay's Puzzle, What Does Experience Teach Us? I've been in the UK for 20 years now, I know how to pronounce the philosopher's name. Marina Warner's new book, Once Upon a Time, A Short History of Fairy Tale, is reviewed by Shahid Abari. And our book of the week is a fantastic one, The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore. We have it reviewed by Julia Miller. Jill Lepore is a staff writer at The New Yorker and also a professor of American history at Harvard University. And she looks into the story of this comic book character who was invented by a man who was inspired by his relative by marriage, Margaret Sanger, a birth control activist, by the suffragettes he saw speaking in Massachusetts early in the 20th century. And he seemed to have a thing for bondage, which is why Wonder Woman's secret power involves a rope.
Very good. Well, all that and more in our book section this week, which starts on page... I'm not sure, I missed that actually. You just closed it in front of my eyes, but it's...
It starts on page 46.
There we go, as if people couldn't find it anyway from the very helpful headings. Moving on back to the news section, however. Holly, there's a report out by the Nuffield Council on Bioethics. It's called The Culture of Scientific Research in the UK, and it has some worrying findings.
Yes, it does. So this is a report that looks at the research culture inside universities and what that means for scientists in terms of ethics. And it finds that there are actually some aspects of the culture at universities for researchers that perhaps lead to some undesirable consequences. Mm. One of these is competition, or something they describe as hyper-competition among researchers. And they talk about in the report how this is a double-edged sword, so it sort of has positive and negative consequences for scientists. And I should say, as part of this, they, to sort of get these conclusions, they held discussion events at 15 universities around the country, and then spoke with funders and publishers of research, and analysed the responses to an online survey which was filled in by about 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And so this double-edged sword in terms of competition, you know, they were saying that the scientists were saying that competition can really help people excel and push them to do their best, which makes science advances happen quicker, but it can also lead them to perhaps have some negative consequences in terms of rushing to finish the results, to work to get it published before other people, cutting corners, or perhaps using less rigorous methods. And in fact, 26% of the people surveyed said they felt under pressure to compromise their research integrity or standards at some point during their career.
Get it done and don't worry about the minute details, that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, and another 13% said that the competition could stop people from sharing data and methods, which is obviously a big part of science as it is. And they also sort of said to their... They found there was widespread mistrust of research assessment exercises. So with the REF, the scientists said that the REF was one of the main drivers for them to be having pressure to publish in high-impact journals, when actually the REF panels are told not to take any notice of journal impact factors when analysing the research for that.
Interesting stuff. The REF, of course, will be covered in THE in depth. We have coverage on the 18th of December and then some follow-up on the 1st of January as well. So that's where you'll find all the REF coverage in the near future. Before we go, the cover feature this week is inspired by what the front cover describes as turmoil at Plymouth, John. And it's looking at Plymouth University, which we've covered in detail over the weeks. You'll find all those stories on our website, and maybe what can be learned, I guess, from sort of sector-wide from some of the difficulties that they've had.
That's right. So Plymouth, that's right. So recent events at Plymouth University saw the Vice-Chancellor Wendy Purcell suspended after a clash with the Chair of Governors, who has now resigned, and now Wendy Purcell has returned to the university as Vice-Chancellor, although she will no longer be running the university. And the piece is looking at whether there are any implications for the rest of higher education from what's happened. So there's a feeling from one Vice-Chancellor that events at Plymouth could make it appear to the government, fairly or unfairly, that universities are not running themselves properly, and that the government might legislate on university governance as a result if there are other problems around as well at other institutions. So one of the criticisms that some people raised is that within university governance structure you can get sort of vice-chancellors and executive becoming isolated from the governors and from the academic board, and there might be questions about whether the guidance that exists about governance from the committee of university chairs, whether that's good enough and strong enough.
Mm.
And I also spoke to Ferdinand von Ponzinski, the Vice-Chancellor of Robert Gordon University, who led a report on governance in Scottish universities that reported in 2012. And that offered some, what to English ears would be quite radical solutions, such as you know, holding governing bodies meetings in public, and chair of the governing body being elected, and sort of
radical stuff,
student representation on governing bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So he was suggesting that actually English universities should seize this moment and hold their own review of governance and really sort of weigh up what they're doing in a very public way, and address these concerns so that they're able to reform themselves, possibly before anyone from the outside tries to voice reform upon them.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, well, that's our cover feature this week. There's no issue review podcast next week, but we do have two podcasts coming out for you next week instead. On Monday, there's an online learning podcast special, myself with Diana Lauriard, Professor of Learning with Digital Technology at UCL Institute of Education, along with Shai Rasheff, who's the founder of the University of the People, and Kyle Dyer, senior lecturer in Addiction Science at King's College London. He ran their FutureLearn, MooCon, Addiction, all talking about developments in online learning. On Wednesday, instead of the issue review, we have a special podcast which ties in with a feature we have next week on university estates. There's also a rankings podcast which came out the day before this one, so you'll find that already where you found this podcast. It's all about the second annual BRICS and Emerging Economies rankings. That's all for this week's issue review. If you want to comment on anything we've discussed or anything in the magazine, you'll find us at timeshighereducation.co.uk, on Twitter, on Facebook and on LinkedIn. That's all for this issue review podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.